August 9th, and the Gur Talk is here for what I'm going to call Burger Time.
Deluxe.
And for those who know that voice, here in the actual house next to me to my left, I have...
I'm not in the house next to you. I'm next to you in the house.
And who are you?
Renato.
Welcome back. Well, welcome, Renato. It's been a while since you've been in the house.
That's right.
Next to me or otherwise. On my right.
Adrian.
On my far left.
Egan.
And let me think here. So from Australia, let's start from Sydney side.
Hey, it's Craig. How's it going?
Moving down to Canberra.
Isn't it up to Canberra? No, mind. It's Carries.
Is it down or up? It's up.
It's kind of down and to the left.
Always thinking up the mountain. Never mind.
And joining us from Dreamland, half asleep, we have...
Hey, everybody. This is Mike. How's it going? Thanks again for having me on.
And we have somebody dropping in here, and well, who dropped in over the weekend in Tokyo, but is now outside of Tokyo somewhere in Japan. But we have a bit of a crossover going on here. We have the Macross recap shows.
All right. Hi, it's Leah. I'm a regular on the Macross Delta recap show, and our show airs on YouTube every week, except for this upcoming week, because we're a little behind with me in Japan.
And you're in town, Celia, and so you got to watch for the first time ever an episode in real time.
I did. It was super awesome. Even though this episode was particularly slow, it was still really exciting just because I got to watch it on Japanese television.
Right, that's going to be me next week.
Nice.
Well, welcome to the show. And let's get straight into it then.
Renato, you have the floor.
Yeah, I have the floor.
As people might notice, my voice is a little on the fritz this week, so I'm going to let most of you guys do the talking. And by you guys, I mean Renato.
All right, Fritz the cat. So this is what happened in the episode. A man walks into a room and talks to a bunch of people. Hey, we're done with the episode. All right, so let's get into the details. We begin with a recap of what happened the previous week, which was, I still don't understand. Apparently, Mikomo sang so strong that they blew up the ruins or something. Anyway, there's a visual recap of all of that, and then, you can hear that the captain of the Elysian is... basically telling you that 2 days have passed and all of the mind control that was happening for the on planet Baldor and all that stuff has been cleared up, but Mikomo is now in a coma and also Hayate is in serious condition. And in the corridor, some shady guy walks up to what's her name? Reyna and the other one?
You mean Mirage and Freya? Freya.
I was going to say, Mirage and Freya?
I can't
what remember. Anime were you watching?
I don't know.
I'm really bad with the names, but I can still tell Mirage and Freya about.
Well, she's a Mirage. You should be lucky you can see her.
I thought you had a problem remembering Ronka and Cheryl. Now you've got a...
All right, fair point.
Remembering Freya
Also, you missed the most important part of the opening, which is that Cat Dad was reunited with Cat Boy and Cat Girl.
You know, I've seen this episode 3 times, and I never ever noticed that.
Yeah, they're right at the start. You know the ace pilot guy?
Yeah.
That would be Captain... That would be Captain Alberto Larrazabal and his 2 children.
Alberto? Yeah.
Larrazabal.
His name is Alberto.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
All right.
I'm sorry, Renato. Does he not have a weird name enough for you?
No, he doesn't. He's an alien. Anyway, so Alberto was reunited with... So what's the boy's name?
Oh, who knows? His kids. The one from the other episode.
Okay, right. And then there's a guy who walks up to whoever those 2 women are, and he says... Hey, so, I'm sorry, I was supposed to be providing weapons and stuff for everyone, but I got lost. So, could you please direct me to the way... Oh, by the way, is Mikomo Guinevere around here, or is she recuperating well. And then, of course, you know, the girls think he's kind of a suspicious guy. And he points out that actually...
Mirage shoots him.
Sorry?
The Mirage shoots him.
Mirage shoots him?
No, I'll just say that would have been, like, it's a security thing, you know? Like, someone suspicious comes up into a secure part of the ship.
Yeah, and not...
And Mirage, being the soldier that she is...
And he's just randomly spouting, like, classified information.
Yeah.
And then making a passive-aggressive thing about it. Oh, that was classified. I'm sorry. I guess I know more information than you. And then he waltzes in and then starts talking to everyone about basically the idea that music is a weapon, right? Or the song is a weapon. And everyone starts saying, no, song is not a weapon. And then he goes on to... Like, he's got some PowerPoint... presentation all ready to go using his remote control pipe. A pipe or a point presentation?
That was an awesome pipe. I want one of those pipes.
A pipe or point
maybe
presentation.
Maybe they'll put it in the next Macross exhibition, like next to Globals. Because we saw a one-to-one replica of Globals pipe.
No, next time you do one of your symposium talks at Anime Expo, you should lead with a pipe.
Yes.
That's what you should do.
We should make one, an electronic one.
Someone jumps up, can jump up in the front, saying "No smoking in the bridge,
Captain."
Captain, yeah. Yes. Anyway,
so and there starts what you call either the worst Macross episode or the best Macross episode, depending on which camp you're in.
Yeah, because basically he says, "Let me explain," and "Let me explain" means I'm going to talk for 25 minutes about how awesome Macross is, which you can take in two ways, right? You can either say, oh my god, Macross is awesome, which would make you a very positive person, half glass full kind of person. I'm a half glass empty kind of person, so as he's going through all the different shows, I'm thinking, you know, I've got all these shows on Blu-ray, maybe I should just watch them.
Better animation, too.
Or animation, you know?
I like that
actually,
also lampshading that even... Mirage is saying, everyone knows this already.
Yes. Everyone watching the show at that point said, I know, oh my god. Yeah, and also they tend to want to keep using the... Look, they just use it just now. We've got the episode playing in the background right now. They tend to want to use the Frontier version of the Zentradi symbol sometimes, and then sometimes the original version of the Zentradi symbol. What's that about?
Oh, wow. We won't even get into how they usually show the Do Remember Love version of Space War 1, but we heard some of the songs from the TV series version, so you get a little mix, just like Macross at first.
Just like Macross should be.
Yeah.
So
it's everything.
Yeah. In the case of this episode, should we hit the beats of what is new for the story and then go back and like then talk about the stuff from all the old stuff?
That didn't work out too well for us last time.
Yeah, but then it's not... It didn't work because we were talking about each character's thing, but actually just
you know what,
the points. Yeah, we could just go over the main points. I mean, basically, he goes through the main five series, or four, or whatever it was, and just builds up on how in each of those things... It has been seen that music has some kind of a power. Sometimes it controls people's minds. Sometimes it breaks people out of mind control, etc., etc. And so his conclusion is, therefore, music is a weapon. And the protoculture saw it that way. They planned it that way. And now there are some forces that are trying to take advantage of that and trying to take it to the next level. On the one side, you've got the Windermerians, who are trying to use the song as a, you know, to make their galactic empire or whatever it is they're trying to do. And on the other side, you've got Chaos and Lady M, who are actually developing it into the ultimate weapon, with probably Mikumo at the heart of it. And of course, they hear that and they don't want to believe it, so they throw him out. Actually, he gets a phone call and walks out. Like a boss.
I was going to say, Chuck wants to arrest him.
Yeah.
For speeching, I guess?
Speechifying.
Yes. First Amendment. Anyway, so... And that's it, basically. So we can go into the details now.
Well, the main reveal was the connection to Frontier and the Vajra.
Yes, you're right. So do you want to go into that first?
So who's talking about the connection between Frontier... Well, look, I'll jump in if you like.
Well, cool? I can say what he said.
Or tell us what he said.
That's what he said. So, basically, the Vajra had, as you know, fold bacteria. Is their official name fold bacteria or fold microbes?
Fold bacteria.
Fold bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Fold bacteria is what I was seeing.
Okay. So fold bacteria were present inside the bodies of the Vajra, and they were also present inside the bodies of a select few people, which was Ranka and Cheryl, right? It seems that once the Vajra thought that humans were a friendly race and they posed no threat or they were intelligent or whatever, then they disappeared to another dimension.
I mean, once Alto eloped with the Vajra queen, and they all took off another dimension.
Yes.
And then what did all the fold bacteria do?
Now, well, I don't know. Basically, some of them remained.
Folded.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kerry, you were saying?
Some of them folded to humanoid races. And not just to the guts, but also like into little cells into, in people.
Yes,
basically.
They went into the nucleus of the cells of, he said humans, but
we mean humanoids.
We can assume, yeah, they're human type
humanoids.
Races. So, okay, that's new because they never mentioned.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just like, hey, Alto, Ranka, Cheryl, thank you for causing the VAR, guys. That was really good. Appreciate that.
Okay, here's what I don't get. He says...
I think that could be the name of this episode.
Here's what I don't get.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Sheldon and Ranka. Yeah. The guy, what's his name? Burger? Burger. So, Burger then says, at around this time, some other people who were immune to this this big fold bacteria started appearing. Or were born. Actually, I just watched the episode. He literally says they were born.
The term he says is born, but I think he's not speaking literally.
I think he's speaking literally because you don't use that with people.
The timeline wouldn't even...
I know, it doesn't make sense.
It could be also translated as debut. So that's one possible way they can
translate. Umare dekta does not.
Oh, umare. Okay, yeah, true. Okay.
Yeah, no, you guys are thinking of Tojo.
No, I'm thinking as in like the birth of... like a force or the birth of some, like, I don't think he's using it in a literal sense because that just wouldn't work timeline wise but it was confusingly put.
Alright, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the burger.
But feel the burg. Anyway, some people have this immunity and some people gain. This is what I didn't really understand, the connection. It seems to me that the fold receptors that these people have, for example, the members of Valkyrie, came about as a direct result of coming into contact with this fold bacteria and kind of fighting it off with the immunity that they've got. Right? Whereas Windermerians have a receptor built into them that is a direct direct link DNA wise to their predecessors, which are the protoculture.
Yeah.
Right.
One thing to note is that the narrative shifts back and forth between when Berger was talking and then when we go back to Windermere and hear them talking. So it's
the impression I got was that they were sort of telling the same story.
Conspiracy.
Right.
But it depends. Some of it is Berger's theory. Some of it are the Windermerians' theory. So they just happen to mesh very well in the storytelling. One particular point of why to note all this is that this is Berger's theory, and while it's the Windermerians' theory, we're not too sure if it's true or not. Even he himself says it's just a rumor on some of the things he's saying, so we don't yet know if it's the truth, what he's saying.
And that's the brilliance of it, because my initial reaction his whole spiel about music being a weapon, and it was interesting, he was trying to connect all the Macross incidents throughout history, which is a great theory. But it also goes against the grain of Macross, and music being one part of culture, and... it's not just music. It's culture and music and love kind of overcome all, right? And whenever music has been approached in Macross to date as being weaponized, I as happens to Rancor and Frontier, it's always in an incredible negative light. And the weaponized or produced version, as a weaponized version would have to be, always loses to the natural spirit, like Basra's spirit.
Anima spiritua. Yeah. I'm
of the opinion, and I hope I'm not jumping into a speculative stance too soon, but I think a lot of Burger stuff is going to be proven untrue.
I think that's more of a phrasing issue than the idea that he was trying to present. I don't think he was saying it was literally... He's saying it's like a weapon. The way that I read it was his theory is that the protoculture put a something within humanoid species that makes them react to the emotions of song. And so it's a way of solving disputes or ending conflicts without bloodshed. Because there's a part, and I don't know where in the episode it was, where he says something like, I think he even says exactly what I just said, like something, it's a way to end conflict without physical violence, you know, like a way to control people and calm them down and get whole groups of people and mobs of people to listen to your point of view, which is more or less exactly what it is. So I don't think it's a terrible theory. I think he kept mentioning it as a weapon, and I agree that that's just poor. Well, that's his way of phrasing it, but I think the core concept behind it, you could argue, has some merit within Macross lore, because that does happen again and again. Positively and negatively, music does influence people on a mass scale, like in a way that it doesn't for us, or not, you know, for the real world.
Well, adding another layer to this and making it even more meta is that Kao Mori and other creators, in their interviews, have been talking about some of these things exactly in not quite the same terms, but in very similar terms. Whereas, you know, Kao Mori was talking about how the first Macross series was all about culture shock, but then when in the later Macross projects, he tried to explore the use of music. So we got this interesting thing where what Berger was saying is kind of like a meta-commentary of Macross as a whole that the creators have been having, this discussion of where Macross is going. Although, like we were saying, that the phrasing is a little bit, well, right. Berger's a weapons dealer. He's a bit more self-serving in that regard.
This is true. The phrasing itself means that however he's putting it is not going to fly within Macross, because I can't see Kao Mori allowing music and the actual word weapon. And, you know, the word he's using for weapon can only be construed as a military weapon. Like, that's...
Yeah. No.
I'm not contradicting you there, Craig. I'm saying that it may be the way he's using it, but I'm saying that things will not be the way he's exactly putting it. Whether it's his own theory or not, like the way he's putting it as someone who knows Macross, and you know, anyone who knows Macross, like, well, no, the whole strictly as a weapon thing, that's not going to fly. There may be two sides to it. Yes. It could be on this way it's a weapon, this way it's a tool of peace or bringing people together if used in another way, that's fine. But the way he expresses it as a weapon, I think that's going to be proven false.
I like how throughout this series, be it from Mikimo, when she was talking about the different perspectives of what actually happened in Windermere 8 years ago, to even in this episode where both, you know, you got Freya saying, no, that can't be true, like other characters saying, no, they don't believe Berger, is that there's more than one side already, and that the story is telling us, hold off on making any judgments yet, and we'll see how this story progresses.
Now, I have to say, just to take a step back, Renato, I know you glossed over this, the use of recreated scenes from past Macrosses to connect Berger's theory. Now, this was partly a please buy our Blu-rays, and partly previously on everything. But Celia, can I throw it to you for a second? I mean, I know you came into Macross through Frontier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So have you caught up on all the other series to date? In the meantime?
The only ones that I'm still working on right now are SDF and Seven. I'm watching those
Okay.
kind of simultaneously right now. But I have seen Do You Remember Love and most of the other ones, except for Macross 2. I think that's the only one I haven't seen.
So how was it for you seeing all these kind of iconic scenes suddenly popping up?
So I thought it was awesome. I really liked seeing Sharon Apple again because she's one of my favorite Macross idols. I mean, the Minmay Do You Remember Love imagery is used pretty frequently in Macross anyways, not just in the show, but in marketing also. So seeing it, I think, is kind of starting to lose its, like, special feeling, at least for me as a fan. I actually watched it with my friend who's not a Macross fan, and so it basically gave her a chance to kind of catch up on the franchise as a whole within this short episode. But then when she found out it was the 19th episode and they were doing this, her reaction was kind of shocked. She was shocked about it, and she's like, what do you mean it's this late in the series and we're covering this? So it was nice seeing it. But at the same time, we're this far in the show, and I don't know if we need that at this point.
Right, which is probably why it had that double purpose of he was linking the meaning of these incidents in his theory, as well as giving us this extended flashback.
Has this, as you were saying, is this the first time we've had Sharon Apple or anything from Macross referenced by any of the other Macross projects?
Well, the original
Macross 7 has a couple of things, but then, like, directly referencing the Sharon Apple incident, has that?
Well, that's macro referenced, I think, in 30 in the game, but not in a show that I can think of.
The fact is that most Macross TV series reference other TV series, not OVAs.
That's true.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, isn't your big deal? Didn't you summarize the second Frontier movie with one word, Isamu? Right. So.
Oh, this is true.
There you go, that's a reference.
This is true. That's a reference. Well, this is a bigger reference.
I mean, no one. The best way to answer this is no one has spent this much time just going through all the series, right? The entire episode was this. One conversation in a room about other TV shows that, if you look at it one way, you could be watching instead.
Did they also introduce a TV show that hasn't actually been made? A drama?
Oh,
it's
kind of like...
Yeah. I took that as they watched SDF Macross.
No.
The tale of Lin Min Mei or something like that.
They do you know what that do you guys not know what
the reference
is?
Seven.
Yes. It's Macross 7. Oh my god, everyone needs to watch this show. In Macross 7, they make a TV show, a drama starring Firebomber as Hikaru Ichijo and Lin Min Mei.
It's called,
and they make an episode called The Lin Min Mei Story.
And even it's even written in English on the script that you see.
Yes, spelled wrong.
Yes,
spelled right, depending on your. Yeah, remember that's the same
depending
spelling.
On your Rubitec fandom.
No, it's spelled that way also her bedroom door.
Yeah.
No, it's an ongoing.
Oh, you mean
meta.
The bedroom door with
the bunny thing
from the explosion.
That is the explosion.
There you go.
Machina's it's all connected, Renato. That whole thing, we're back on that?
I think we're on a...
we're on a tangent, but this is Macross. Of course,
but
it's going to go
that was a little reference by Reyna, and I've got to say, I think Reyna's character was the funniest thing about this whole episode, because she kept coming up with these little snide comments.
Yeah, she said, I've recorded it.
Yeah.
You know, like she's going to watch it
but
later.
But, like, you know, how she's like, she actually just fire says she's pissed off at Burger.
Yeah.
And... it's like, what is it?
Are you a stalker?
Stalker or information discrimination, things like that.
Yeah, that was my favorite one.
She was, it was like meta commentary. It's like, she was basically saying some of the things that we're thinking in our heads, but we wouldn't imagine a character would say in the story.
But it was nice seeing, all this imagery come back, I thought. Seeing Sharon Apple drawn on screen multiple times, in multiple ways, I was like, wow, that's not something I expected to see. But look, shall we move on?
Wait, SDF 1.
Oh,
nice. No. It wasn't the SDF 1.
No,
it was something else.
The ASS 1? No, but then after that, it became the SDF 1. The ASS 1 was based on the original line art, but the SDF 1, you know what that was based on?
Tell us.
The Hasegawa kit they just brought out. I know because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, internet, but I think it was Frank. Frank Reynolds.
Hey, Frank.
You put it up, right? That exact same photograph that they basically just drew over. You can tell that because of the proportions of like the
spikes in the mast or something. Well, you know, I've seen multiple pictures on Twitter, for example, of the artist for Macross E has a Jorgalkin of 171 because they're trying to learn how to draw mecha and do poses for it, right?
Also, Adrian's going to burst out laughing in a minute because...
I know.
Because right. You know what I'm going to say, right?
I know
what you're going to say. The Yamato VF-19 in the extra bonus disc of FB7. They based the 3D model on that because you can even see the tabs on the toy.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that this is not unheard of. And the fact that...
Laziness is not unheard of.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. Okay.
What on earth are you guys talking about?
See? See? They can trick even fans. Now they can be lazy and get away with it. Yeah. I'm here to point it out to everyone.
Hey, even the comic book licensees for Robotech are doing that very same thing.
Yeah,
except they're doing it based on imports that are being blocked. It's not worth talking about.
Can we go back to the episode?
Yes, please.
We're done. What else?
one reveal. Give us some more reveals.
Well, first off, I think it sounds like I'm the only one who liked the episode because I really dug it. But
what did you like about it?
A couple of things.
I didn't hate it.
Well, I like the way that the plot reveals happen in the show. Like Berger sits here and tells us a theory, and you're right. It's him talking for 20 minutes or intercut with Road talking for 20 minutes. But we got like I can't believe that you didn't like this one on some level, Gwyn, because this had lots of little reveals and lots of little details and clues to take us further toward answers. For example, the Windermerian side of things had quite a lot going on. We haven't really talked about that. The Windermerian side starts with Royd and Keith in the prince's, I guess he's the king now, the king's bedchamber where... what's his name? Lies unconscious. What's the king's name?
Hines.
Thank you. He's unconscious, and there's a doctor there who's saying he's fine. He's basically just exhausted. And Keith and Royd leave, and they go back to Royd's glasses room. And basically, it's the way I think of it.
He has glasses room. Yeah,
that's right.
He's studying.
His study, yeah.
It's a glasses room. Craig's named it officially. It's canon.
Yeah. His study is next door. This is his glasses observation. But he starts saying that was a relief. I messed up. I shouldn't have pushed him too hard. You know, I screwed up. And then the assumption is that he and Keith have a conversation that is similar in content to the one that Berger is having with the others. There was a couple of key points that I thought came out interesting. One is that the runes in the hair of
the
Windermerians are fold quartz.
Fold quartz and receptors.
Yes. Yeah, well, he says that throughout the episode they talk about how there are fold receptors. The impression I got was everyone has fold receptors. Most people have the bacteria from the Vajra now, and the Windermerians have fold quartz and receptors in the runes that increases their, reception.
Mummy, where do Windermerians come from? Well, when a Protoculture and a Vajra love each other very, very much, this is what happens, apparently.
It says that this is the proof that we're the true heirs of the Protoculture. He says something along those lines. Like, that's their justification for it. And then there's a little moment, like, Keith, throughout this whole explanation, looks... I really think Keith, who was in on this plan with Royd from the beginning, is really starting to question Royd's loyalties. He says something along the lines of, like, I just wanted to take back Windermere. I didn't really care about the galaxy.
Right. And Royd is like, well, you know, it's just like you to be satisfied with just Windermere.
Right.
Sorry, was that Kareem?
Can I jump in really quick?
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Because my voice is
I wanted to say, like, during this part, I'm right there with you, Craig. Like, I felt like because there was that that nurse or whatever that was attending to Hines. He tried to tell Keith something, but then I think it was the twins that were in the background, and he was just like, "Oh, forget it," you know.
Well, so twins, I thought it was just two random guards, but he starts to say something about the former king. He goes, "It's about the former king," and then he gets stopped.
Yeah, and I got the distinct impression that, like, you're right, that, like, Keith is starting to have his doubts, like, what's going on here? And I felt like, just in the way that he was saying things, like, I felt that he was starting to have that connection to his brother that his brother showed earlier that he was trying not to acknowledge. You know, he was like, no, you're the king, you're the prince, you're the king, you're not my brother. But, like, it felt like that's like, that relationship starting, like, he's starting to, like, care about him more, or maybe that he's always cared about him, but it's starting to become more apparent. The other thing is that when they crossed, when Royd and
the room,
when they crossed, did you get the,
right.
they had a moment. Mike, you're breaking up really bad.
Sorry about that. How about now? Is that better?
That's better. Sorry. Start from your Fujoshi rune moment.
Yeah. I know you're thinking about the Windermerian guys, that big pan shot that they brought back again just for you.
Yes. So what I was saying, sorry about the interruption there. I was saying the runes, they interacted, and I'm just like, oh my god, Fujoshi fan service! Like, what the heck is this? Like, it just it me for a loop. So anyway, that's all. I just wanted to make sure that got mentioned.
Okay, well, the jokes aside on that, I agree. My first thought was, wow. 1,000 Dojin writers just cried out in anguish and were suddenly busy. But my read on that was that it was Royd reaching out to Keith and Keith ignoring him.
Yeah, I got that impression too.
Yeah.
Unrequited?
No, that sort of thing. I think it was like, the whole thing with the runes and Windermerians is very complicated, and we don't really know enough about it. But we know that it's a very personal thing, and that it's something that gives, you know, like, certainly has an emotional component to it. So the way that I read that was Royd, I'm sure that at some point that's kind of when Royd and Keith were closer, that sort of thing regularly happened. That, you know, they would sort of reach. "Quote unquote," reach towards each other, and I thought that was like Royd reaching out his hand and Keith ignoring it. No. Yeah, what was he saying? To go back to the point you were making before, Mike, where you said, you know, Keith's, you know, or changing his mind towards Royd. I think that happened because to me the shift over happened, and Keith's closeness to his brother started to come into effect when he got anointed king, because at that point they had won back Windermere, which is all Keith wanted. And from that point on, he's been getting more and more suspicious about things as time goes on. He still does it. He's still out there and he's still fighting, but I think he's starting to question it all.
See, Craig, I agree with that. And I think, as Mike was saying, the fact that the doctor who was attending Hines came up to Keith later, and I think he did slip something into his jacket, right? That was the impression.
Yeah,
that was a document. So I think that could be the king's will.
Yes.
Right? That's what I think it was. But even before then, though, to go back to Keith and Royd, before Royd did that reach out, did you notice his runes? They were dark. So I don't think he's on the level. He may have reached out, but this may be his, like, it may have been Keith's last chance. I think Royd's fully up for betraying him now. But his runes were not, like, both of them were light, and then Royd's went out, like, at least twice during that conversation, which meant he was feeling nothing while he was talking. So I thought that has got to mean something. But
Well, it was glowing when he was describing his research.
Well, we got two ladies on the line, so can we get a woman's perspective on what's going on here? Because I don't want to hear about these guys talking more about guys.
I just want to mention the thing about Roy's runes not glowing. Like, that's actually been brought up in the show before. Grammier brought it up, like, ages ago. I can't remember exactly when. He's like, I just don't feel anything from your runes. And so that suggested to me that Roy has been hiding something from almost everyone for however long he's been plotting whatever he's been plotting. And to be honest, I'm sort of not with everyone in the sense that I don't know if Keith was actually in on everything that Roy has been planning to do all along. So I get the feeling that even Keith wasn't in on the idea that Roy really wanted to go expand across the galaxy. He thought it was only about the sector. But because Roy came up with the idea that, or Roy came up with the notion that the will of the king was to expand across the sector and take over across the universe and take over the whole universe, he went along with it, especially since Hines was along with it as well. That's the impression I've gotten from watching all the way into here, but you know, that's sort of my opinion on it.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar, like, around the time that Royd announced his plans to expand into the galaxy was actually when I started seeing that in Keith, where he was really not with the plan. And not really pushing back, but just kind of not as eager as he had been before to follow along with what Roy was planning.
And possibly this document that Keith has gotten is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and we're going to see a divide there. Of course, as Celia, I think you said your friend mentioned, we are fairly late on in the series for this to be happening. This, but you know, as well as having flashbacks to all the other series. So I do wonder where they're going with this climax-wise. And to reply to something you said earlier, Craig, upon first viewing, I was very disappointed with this episode. I found the second viewing was far more stomachable. I think that was because the first time through, I was expecting more of a balance. I wasn't expecting an entire episode of Info Dump. When we got to the first ad break, I was like, all right, they're going to have to come back after the ad break and kind of change it up a bit. But no, we went straight back into information dumping. And just from a narrative perspective, from a structural perspective, that is just terrible writing. And to have it all in one place, it just struck me as really amateurish. And so, as maybe not as much as Renato, but similar to Renato, I was hoping for some Valkyries this episode as well, but
we had some Valkyries. They just moved very, very slowly across the screens.
those scans from the Macross Chronicle. But you know, I was hoping for more of a mix, and to when I realized, well, this is an entire episode of information dumping, then when I went back and watched it the second time, knowing what I was in for and absorb it all, I enjoyed all the nuance for what it was, but in the way it was presented, I still think is highly flawed narratively.
I think Delta's
don't tell.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think Delta's going to be an interesting show when it's over to rewatch, to kind of like watch from start to finish again, because I wonder how much, like, you know, I don't remember all the early episodes that well. So I wonder how many clues are planted that we've forgotten about. So, I mean, I agree with you. This is a big info dump episode, and we've had a few of them. It didn't bother me, but I do agree with what you're saying. And at this point, we've only got, what, at most 6 episodes left?
Assuming
it's 26?
Probably 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's going to 27, is it?
No, because going to if it goes 26...
It's 27. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
On your desk, on your shelf there, I see Orgus. The original show.
My shelf, you're talking about? Yeah, okay.
Your shelf, yeah. So, I'm just remembering, episode 13 of Orgus was what people would think is the big info dump episode. But it wasn't 25 minutes of info dump. Only the last 7 minutes or so were, okay, well, this is what happened. Basically, all the different dimensions split up, and now they've come together in this mishmash mosaic type of a world, and blah, 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 and you are the Tokuiten, and there's another Tokuiten somewhere. So everything that you need to understand the first part of the story is in those last 7 minutes, and before that, you've got this big battle with mutant palm trees. You know, where are the mutant palm trees in this episode? That's all I want. Anything like those mutant palm trees have nothing to do with the overall story of Orgus. It's just that they knew, hey, we can't have half an hour of just information. We can't.
I think one thing that kept me more charitable about this is knowing from previous Macross projects, and for that matter, a lot of anime, that when you get to like half a year long series, you're going to have the inevitable recap episode as the animators have to play catch up. And we know that some of the animators weren't even in this country for long stretches, so they kind of needed at least a week just to catch up with things. Like the first Macross series, we had the dream episode, and like Macross 7, we had the episode where it was just all about the past of Protoculture with some still shots. And in most anime projects that are about this long, you're going to inevitably get the recap episode. So what they did in this particular case is make it a recap of the entire Macross franchise. So I was okay with that, partly because of that.
And the icing on the cake, if they would have done it, is if before Hayate woke up, they would have showed him riding a bicycle.
Flying into the air, doing ET.
Even if
that would have been awesome.
No, this is a Tell Don't Show episode, so he would have told Mirage that he was riding a bicycle.
Yeah, what? I had a dream that I was riding a bicycle.
And you were there, and Toto was there.
Before we get into that last little scene with Mirage, the other thing I thought was interesting was Berger talks about how when the Wildcure girls, or when people with their particular skill set are put in danger, it heightens their powers, like they get stronger. Like that's why all the times when, you know, every time Freya throws herself off a ship or something, or every time, you know...
every time she did it once.
Moogles. No, I know. It was just the first. She's a suicidal maniac. But what's not Megumi?
Mikimo
is an attack. Mikimo. I'm jumping.
But you know, Mikimo jumping around in the first episode and shielding everyone and kind of doing all these daredevil stunts. That when they're doing that, it's actually increasing their powers. Their fold receptors are more information is going out or something. It was something like that, right? Like, don't they say at this point...
Well, basically, if you go back to the second episode where Freya is auditioning, Kaname's basically telling them over and over that you're going to be put in those situations, life and death situations, that if you can't cut the mustard, you're not for Valkyrie. So...
And it's not until the trap in the cable car.
Well, I mean, during the audition, like during the part where like she goes, her and Johnson go in to tell them, like, you know, like you've made it this far. She pretty much lays it down on the line that, you know, if you don't have the stuff and you aren't willing to like put yourself out there in danger, you can leave right now. So,
so it could be necessary for them to be effective rather than the risk.
Dovetailing into this is something that I think we haven't really covered much, is that another major reveal that they gave in this episode, if you believe what Berger says, that Mikimo is, for all intents and purposes, a weapon herself. If you believe if you believe what he implies.
I was going to say, actually, that was a two-step kind of reveal in a way, because first he mentioned Lady M. And of course, he says multiple times, this is only a rumor, but... Lady M's been researching weaponization of music since the end of Space War One ended. Okay?
Oh, wait. I just realized that means we kind of know
that
how
limits,
far it goes.
Well, that also limits who Lady M can be if she's
be
a recurring
enough.
Character.
Yes.
Which I was like, wow, okay, that's kind of huge. And that she'd been looking into everything from, if I refresh my memory, biological weapons, gene manipulation, and androids. And he said androids very pointedly, and got a reaction out of Reyna and
Machina. He'd never said Mikimo, but all the Valkyrie folks were like, you know, automatically jumped to the conclusion that he meant Mikimo, but he didn't say Mikimo.
Right. Yeah. Now, if she is an android, I don't know. Let's throw it to Celia. Is Mikimo an android? Please give us a conclusive answer.
You know, I don't think she's an android. Actually, the images that he showed of the Protoculture singers reminded me a lot of Mikimo's aesthetic. And when she first appears in that white dress and her visions, I've actually been kind of calling that the Protoculture Queen outfit that she has. So even if she's not necessarily Protoculture, you know, themselves, that's kind of the vibe that I've been getting from her anyways, is that she's connected to them in some way. And maybe some form of how we get to see the actual Protoculture, even though the series has said before that they don't exist anymore. But she's woken up on a hospital table. So the reality is that that leaves it fairly open. I'm just going based off of how she looks compared to the images that Belger was sharing during his presentation.
I thought those Protoculture singer images were really interesting, if a little, they were kind of vague, but the fact that there appeared to be four of them, it was like the proto-idol group.
Now, do you know?
I thought they were the same one.
Well, I thought it was kind of like the Do You Remember Love concert scene where it was just the projections of the one.
Yeah, that's...
But again, that's just going off of one still image.
One still image. I thought that at first, but like there was at least two of them were in different poses at the same time.
I have to admit, I thought it was four different singers, and I thought that they all looked vaguely like Mikimo.
I just thought of something, like in previous projects of Macross, when they depicted Protoculture, they're usually these fake, vaguely humanoid silhouettes or figures, very blurrily seen in flashbacks from the first Macross series, from when they went to the Protoculture ruins of Macross 7. Those singers are probably the clearest image, if they are Protoculture characters, of people from that civilization.
Right. Yeah, we've never seen what they look like.
It's similar to them showing the ASS-1.
Yeah.
Alien Spaceship 1, as Reno's...
The ass-1.
Is very, very useful, helpful in spelling out.
Going back to Mikimo,
Well, just that they actually used the line up there, right? Which has never been put in animation before.
Usually it was this blurry fireball.
I know. Alright.
But what?
Fine, keep going.
Going back to Mikimo, if you remember, once the first episode came out, a lot of people were complaining that she was holding on to the to Messer's Valkyrie, like with a rope or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "No, she'd be dead. She'd be." A while later, the first real big special article on Macross Delta in Newtype came out, and part of Mikimo's description describes her as being the only member of Valkyrie that is able to do that.
Yeah, I remember that, actually.
Why would they point that out if they weren't making... Like, when I read that, I thought, okay, she's not human.
Right.
Yeah, well, I've said that for... Yeah, but totally.
Well, if she's android, she will be the second android singer in the Macross continuity, which would be interesting. Because
you're talking about the music culture?
Yeah, Elle from the music culture was in the Miss Macross 29 contest. And yeah,
that's right.
And she was actually really good. But, so is she an android? Who knows, but she's on a medical ship which was rushed out to deal especially with her. And Captain Johnson points out that there has been no word from Lady M concerning Mikimo or her condition. She has kept complete silence on that specific issue.
Yes.
Whereas whenever they've needed anything else from Lady M, she's been there. In action, if not in form. So, one wonders what's going on there.
I like that we're, as an audience, are seeing something that even the team, Delta Flight, as well as Valkyrie, haven't seen. What Mikimo's doing on the hospital, inside that hospital ship, floating in this vat of, who knows, goop or something like that.
Of ectoplasm.
Yeah. We have, you know, not that that answers the question of what she is or who she is, but we're seeing that she's not being treated aboard that ship like, well, say, like Hayate was.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, so does she have any type of oxygen unit on, or she just...
No.
She's just doing that floating in the water thing she always does.
Yeah. No, that's true. Oh, we already knew she could be underwater.
Right.
So, the way he phrased that, by the way, about what Lady M, well, Lady M keeping her silence on Mikimo, did anyone else get the impression that it's like she has always kept this kind of silence? She really hasn't said anything on Mikimo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really find that line surprising because they don't know where she lives. They she's a mysterious Venus or whatnot, but that wasn't really something that jumped out at me.
If we're going by that train of thought that we went with Space War One, that Lady M had to have been at least from that time period, who does that rule out in that case? Is there people that we can rule out from?
Oh, wouldn't that rule out like and Milan?
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Like
the door, the Max and Milia's kids.
Right. It would basically leave what Milia, Minmay,
M Gadget, or there's always Mosh.
Mao. We know that
Mao would be really, really old. True. But yeah.
No, Mao died.
True.
Did you?
Yeah,
it says that in the Chronicle.
Shammy Malone.
Ooh. Digging deep in there, yeah.
So so Mike, this all ties into the pachinko footage, right? Because she became a captain first.
That's correct.
All right. Also, I thought it was interesting, just on a different level, that a lot of people were pointing out these illustrations of, for example, Sharon Apple. Well, Lisa Ebata's got a credit in the credits, as she has for a while now. Yeah. A lot of people are saying that looks like her art. What did you guys think?
Yeah, it's all in the lips.
Okay.
Yes, that's her.
So you think the Sharon Apples were
Ebata?
And also, the new final song, the ending song, which was, I believe, hang on, let me translate. It's like When the Wind Blows Without Warning, was written by Maya Sakamoto.
Yep.
Oh, God, this is going to be the worst song in the next album.
That's right, because we first heard about it when we saw the credits for the album and it listed her. It's like, oh, wait a minute, what's she doing in there? Right.
What's the title called?
Just a quick and dirty translation off the top of my head. The Wind Blows Without Warning, or Without Notice.
The wind blows without warning.
This is the Anchor Cast.
That's beautiful. Okay, I have one question about this episode. At the end, when Mirage goes over to Hayate and does the whole Macross 7 ending again, because everyone who's seen that show must be thinking the same thing.
No, there's actually people who put up like shots of Milane.
Really?
Yeah, there's comparison
side by side
online.
Yeah, yeah, like I was just going by the dialogue. It's pretty much the same. But yeah, I guess you're right. It even looks the same. Anyway,
they have the same expression, pretty much. The same open mouth and everything.
Yeah, well, for everything, Seven did it. But anyway, my question is, she is addressing him with the Teinego, with the mass and the des. Since when has she done that? Because I didn't notice.
She was just being really embarrassed because she was in a personal situation. She wasn't.
You don't do that in a personal situation.
Well, because she's embarrassed, she defaults to polite language.
She's talking in polite Japanese language, basically, which is very unnatural, especially considering that she's his superior, not the other way around. It would be something that you would use to someone above you and never to someone below you in Japanese society. Mm. And so it's very, very strange. He sometimes uses it on her, but I don't remember, and I haven't watched very closely recently, but I don't remember her ever saying that, ever using that on him.
Yeah, she usually wouldn't in most circumstances, but she was pretty much doing the kind of, while you're sleeping, possessing, you know, like, professing her love, in a way.
Milan didn't do that. Well, that's the difference.
Yeah.
Seven didn't do that. Seven didn't flaunt social conventions.
Milan couldn't make a choice. Like, you know, playing on the stage and throwing beams of light over to Basada, beams of light over to Gamlin, Bass,
to Basada. That is true.
Like, she couldn't even make a choice. Where it's not about a choice. She's going in there, you know, because she's worried about him and talking to him in a different way. And she doesn't know he can hear her the whole time.
Yeah. Which makes it even more weird, doesn't it? That she would use polite language to someone who can't hear her.
I think that's the whole point.
Is it something
To ask a Japanese person.
Is it something you do during... Because she's kind of, in a way, praying for him to wake up. I mean, she's talking to him, but is it something you might do like a... like a formal situation like that, like where she's trying to praying or she's trying to I don't know. It's somber. Is it something you do in somber?
At him, Egan. What do you
right? Mean? But she doesn't think he's awake.
Polite language in Japanese culture can also mean distance as well as you know, and then if you're talking to someone who's at death's door, yeah, you might be in some that kind of indication.
I thought it was a good scene.
Yeah,
so did I. Mm-hmm.
Finally, we're getting more of a that you know we're all talking about how the love triangle really isn't well too formed on some of the legs of the triangle. We needed that. Between Hayate and...
Yeah, and I really think, going back, I've said before, it's where, in previous episodes, I've mentioned the connection between Hayate and Freya is just the fold, you know, everything that has to do with, you know, bacteria or whatever, genetics. But between Mirage and Hayate, they're the only ones that spend real time together. So, and...
Yeah.
And I think... Yeah. You know, this is their type of relationship. And why are we looking at a medical...
Yeah, you're right.
Because it's the only... The medical ship scene's the only scene with Valkyries.
Oh, yeah.
Look at those
batroids. Oh, man. Anyway.
I wanted to raise... Now that we have it on our screens in front of us that you can't see on this podcast...
Yeah.
Is that this is a really unique design that they have for the medical ship. And
no, because it looks like the 1998 Godzilla.
That's not the first thing I would have thought of. Now like, that I look at it,
it's like a Gradius boss.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It looks.
It looks like a video game. Yeah.
This would be the one time I would actually say this looks like a Thomas Moraine design.
It looks. The medical ship looks like a very much like a Thomas Moraine design.
Yeah, it's just but like Space Dandy.
Yeah, it does
let's
look
find
like.
The let's if see they what
made,
the credits say,
if they
if
make
anything.
It pink, yeah. It'd be Space Dandy.
And if it had a gag, like a ball gag in the front.
Well, they got one on the side.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, look, let's jump to... We've been going on for a while here, guys, so let's jump to final opinions.
Well, I just wanted to ask Carice about that Japanese thing.
I can't remember. I thought she has used polite language previously.
If she has, then I guess that's okay.
I'm fairly certain she has, even with Hayate. It's just not in situations where she's... where they're acting as... sort of senior and sort of junior in the organization, but more in the more private situations. I think she tends to use teinagel, like polite language.
It's interesting that she would do that. Because that's the opposite of what regular people would do. Anyway,
yeah, because she's older than him as well anyway, so...
Yeah.
But I'm fairly certain that's what she's always done.
Well, shall we look into some final opinions? Yes, Carice, so what did you think of the episode overall?
Yeah. I think I already mentioned that to you, but yeah, I was really annoyed by the info dump, just like most people were. But I did get a lot of information out of it. It was just frustrating to have to process it all in one day. I think one other thing, and this could be where Freya is going, do we actually talk about this? What's his name again?
You need to be more specific.
Burger, there you go. God, I can't remember too many characters. What Burger brings up about the weaponization of singing, that goes basically to the core of who Freya is. So it's like that's, in a sense, the most important thing to her. And so this is what her major conflict can be. Like, she's had little conflicts all along with, like, for example, Hayate's dad being the one who drops the bomb on Windermere, but... Like, she always got over that really, really quickly. Now, this one, I expect her not to get over really quickly. It's that serious. So I think that'll be interesting heading going forward. Lots of other things, but I think I'll let the rest of you have time to say something as well.
Okay, Craig.
I think it's interesting what you were just saying, Kay, about that, because this feels similar to the way that in Frontier, Ranka's... I'm trying to think of the way to phrase it. Like, her sense of who she was started to erode towards the end of the series, and now she, you know, going into the reason she left with Brera was the way, because she was starting to feel lost, and she's starting to feel like all the what she'd always wanted wasn't what she wanted after all, and it was getting twisted and stuff. And I'm starting to feel that same sort of echoes with Freya now. yeah, I think this was a decent episode. Obviously, it's not, you know, anything with Valkyries in it, I'm going to prefer, because I like jets, and this had zero of them.
They turn into spiders. Giant spiders.
Great. Thank you,
Renato. Okay. That's all right. So you guys should not let Renato drink before a show, because he's clearly having the dreams again.
Reading what he's looking at, what he's drinking, is Aquarius vitamin B drink.
Oh, it's the vitamin B that does it.
No alcohol in here. So.
Actually, there's nothing. This is tea.
Oh, that's it.
Tea. Yes.
Tea stands for tequila.
It's like spring water, right? Egan, while you
were... three amigos.
While you were here, what was your thoughts on the episode?
I think I pretty much said what my thoughts were on this episode of, you know, the info dump, the need for a recap sometimes in Macross. So I'm just going to say that for all the people who are looking at the glasses room from Royd, just wanted to mention that the character store that has been making the rounds in Japan, Namco just announced that they're releasing and actually put it in stores the glasses cases of Royd. You can get a replica of that. And that's my final thought on this episode.
Don't forget, you can also get the glasses cleaning tissue. It comes with the actual cleaning one.
But until they do Burger's Pipe, we're not there yet.
Which is actually a universal remote control that you can use for like your TV and stuff.
Yeah, so. Regardless of whether you're on like a third party's battleship or not. Adrian.
It's really mixed for me, and this episode really pushed my limits, because I try to stay, like, on the fence, usually,
mm-hmm.
and this one pushed me to one side after thinking about it, and I don't mind when they open the story with, you know, just a still image or an image with some movement, you know, motion graphic-wise, that's fine, but... that it kept recurring like every 6 minutes to the episode, and especially when you get to the battle scenes, I just flash back to like PC Engine Macross 2036.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel like I should have a controller in my hand and wait for the next round.
Yes.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like. That was watching it just now. It was what it felt like. It felt like those recap scenes from Macross 30.
Yeah,
you know?
But that was the other thing about the episode as well, is I was really going, okay, if they're going to do this and just put in a bunch of still images and not show stock footage, which I think I would have rather had, they better put in Macross 30. Macross 30 better get some kind of mention, since it was the game, and there's so many things that kind of link everything within 30.
Yep.
But no, they didn't do that because it was a game. So that was kind of disappointing. But a lot of the images were really cool that they put in there. Of course, there's a Hasegawa Kit one that people are just saying it's paint over, whatever. But the one image...
You can see the seam lines, apparently.
Yeah, but the image that kind of takes me out is the Zentradi image, where Minmay's in front of Zentradi.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be looking at her like all scared. And one of the Zentradi, it looks like he's looking at his watch and he has this expression on his face like he's late for work.
Maybe that's the meta commentary in this episode. Get on with this episode already. We're 15 minutes in, we're still talking about things. Should you be doing
something else? Yeah, if you look at that shot, he's the Zentradi all the way to the left. And he the way his arm's up and his expression, he's not looking at Mime, he's looking at his watch. If he's wearing a watch. And Renato's going straight to that scene.
Well,
I was too, and I don't see it. But I see the guy you mean, but anyway.
It's just the way the camera pans, all of a sudden it just looks like he's looking at his watch.
Right. Go ahead.
And that's pretty much it. I thought it was a bit of a letdown of an episode. There was some grains of like stuff to push the story forward, but that was about it.
Mike, are you still with us?
I am cool.
Look at that guy. Look at his expression.
I am here.
Sorry, we're looking at the Zentradi's expression, not yours, Mike. But since we can't see your expression, tell us what you thought of the episode.
Well, I thought it was better than Macross 2.
Okay, this podcast is not going to end.
I just like the funny part is I really didn't have a problem with Macross 2, but I always like getting a little dig into Adrian whenever I can.
Drops the mic.
But no, I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm with Craig here. I rather enjoyed it. I don't know. I like when like those CW shows when they do crossovers and stuff like that. I like crossover shows, so I just think it's I like whenever Star Trek has somebody else from another Star Trek series in it. I really dig on that. So like for me, I was like, oh, this is cool. They're like, because I don't know if it's like some unwritten rule somewhere that you're not supposed to mention. If you're a certain franchise and you're a spinoff, you shouldn't mention that other franchise for whatever reason, just because you're trying to establish your own identity. So I like when a show breaks that convention and like acknowledges where it came from. I enjoy that. So and the theories that Berger presented and set forth, I thought were really interesting. Everybody at this point has kind of figured that Mikimo is not human, and whether what she is, either she's a clone or an android or, you know, something. Something I also noticed that those doctors that were working on her, I don't know if it's the last episode or the one before it, where she has the flashbacks to
the last one
when she was. Yeah, I guess it was the last episode. But yeah, I checked. They're the same doctors. They have the same haircuts. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. So like, I don't know if Mikimo is an experiment on behalf of Chaos and Lady M. Like maybe that's why she's staying mum on it, because she doesn't have to see anything because that's her medical team that's taking care of her. You know what I mean? I don't know. Just my thought.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to say this to Mike, and this has nothing to do with Macross 2. I'll get you another day. But you're saying you like crossovers like Star Trek. I mean, the closest thing to a crossover in this episode was Berger showing up on the other side. There wasn't really any characters that came in from the other shows. So if you want a true Macross crossover, I highly recommend you sit through FB7.
Oh.
Oh.
That's not fair. No one should have to do that.
I watched FB7. I didn't have an issue with it. That's the thing. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Egan's reaction.
No, it's okay. Well, some of us paid 1,800 yen to watch in a movie theater and wondered why we did. So yeah,
twice.
Twice? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Once was worth it because Fukuyama was true. Next to me. So.
But that's another podcast. So, Renato,
huh?
Thoughts? Basic.
I could go both ways. I mean, I could see it the way...
I'm talking about the episode.
Thank you. Are you done? I mean, I could see it the way Mike is seeing it, which is basically, oh my god, Macross is great. You know, all this stuff that I love, all in one 30-minute bite-sized package. Or, you know, just stuff that I already knew. And Berger's theories are not as wild as you might think. He's basically just summarizing everything. And, you know, giving clues that we'd already worked out. I mean, people had been saying that maybe Mikimo is an android from the first episode. If this had been a confirmation, then we'd have gotten something. But he just said, well, it's just a rumor. Yeah, it was a rumor before the show started airing. So, I mean, okay, whatever. Also, at least have something. You know, I'm not going to mention the Orgus stuff again, but, you know, Egan, you mentioned the recap episode of Macross 7, right, where we see the protoculture messenger person, right, and the protoculture ruins. That was also an info dump episode. It was 23 minutes of information, but then you know what? The protodevil came in and they blew everything up good. So you have 5 minutes of explosions and battles, and Gavel being an asshole as usual, and that was brilliant. So
if someone had walked into that room and blown everything up, I'd be like, oh my god, I gotta watch the next episode. But they just ended it, and I'm leaving. Well, what about the next episode? Is something gonna happen? And the teaser is just Royd.
Oh no, it was Keith, wasn't it?
Standing,
standing, looking at a sunset.
Right. And what was the name of that next episode, by the way?
I don't remember.
Shoto Experiment. I guess it can be translated as Impulsive Experiment, Instinctual Experiment.
Correct.
Okay, action please.
Celia, now, as you mentioned, it was, you know, a very, very dialogue-heavy episode, but, I mean, what was your takeaway from it? How did you feel about it?
That's got really good.
You know, I really liked seeing, you know, the stuff that I've already have seen with Macross. Like, that was pretty neat. And I'm always down for more Risa Abata illustrations because she's one of my favorite Macross artists. But I'd really just like some forward motion in the story. You know, yes, the last few episodes have been, you know, they've been fun or they've been informational. I mean, but we didn't get any answers as to what happened in just the last episode. Not even just little answers to the events that occurred previously. And that's kind of what I've been hoping for, is even just like maybe one or two answers. But, and that's something that Delta's been doing really this whole time, is proposing questions and then taking a really, really, really long time to actually answer them. So I'm kind of mixed on it as well. It wasn't my favorite episode of Delta, but, you know, I'll keep watching because I want to see how it's ending. But so far, it's just not, past few episodes just kind of not jiving with me very well.
Yeah, it just seems that this information could have been worked into multiple across multiple episodes, or even handled in a better way. It just felt that they were trying to cover up some of the info dumping with a nostalgia bomb with all the footage. I don't know, and they'd already pulled the nostalgia bomb in a way when they showed Freya talking about singers back in like episode what, 4 or 5, mm-hmm. And they showed the exact same firebomb picture. You know, they didn't even have the decency to give us a new firebomb picture. Oh well.
But I mean, that was the same illustration for when Freya said she listened to Min Mei Firebomber set.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to go back and look. I thought it was a totally. Oh, you mean the image of the band?
No, the band, not of the fleet. The picture of the band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the same picture. But, all right, well, I think we've covered pretty much everyone's opinions there. Celia, just while we've got you on the line, and look, mm-hmm. hopefully we can have you on another podcast at some point as well. What have you done that's Macrossy while you've been in Japan? If you can give us, like, briefly, have you seen?
Oh, okay. I actually went shopping in Akiba with Adrian yesterday, and I picked up one of the crossover figures, so Min Mei and Cheryl's outfit.
Nice.
And then the whole Macross Heroines Nendoroid Petite set. So I got those. I finally got the last volume of Cheryl Kissing the Galaxy. All four of them. I did. I now have all four of them. And when I was in Osaka earlier this past week, I went to Fire Bomb Bar.
Nice.
And that was really cool. I'm really thankful for my friend being there with me, though, because without Yanni, I probably would not have had as great of an experience as I did, because I speak, like, barely any Japanese. So she was my interpreter for a lot of it. It was a really neat place, and, like, they let me hold the Firebomber guitar, Basara's guitar that they have there, and they told me it was Yoshiki Fukuyama's from a concert that he did. Mm-hmm. And I ended up leaving, you know, making a couple new friends, so that was pretty cool.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad you found that place, because it really is a hole in the wall.
Yeah, we got really lucky. there was literally like a 6-inch like whiteboard on the ground in front of the big tower building that said Fire Bombard, you know, 6th floor, first room. And I think that's probably the only way we would have found it as quickly as we did.
Fair enough. All right, so where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Planets Twinkle, and I'm also on the Macross Delta Recap Show, and our YouTube handle is Macross World.
Terrific. Carice, where can people find you?
I can also be found on Twitter at Carice67. And I have radio translations, but I haven't really been doing them. Not for the last 2 weeks, sorry.
Slacker. Speaking of slackers, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Sorry about that. Yes. Hey. Sorry. yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Mike in Redlands. Yeah, find me there. Tweet me.
Okay.
Drop me a line. Deuces. Peace.
Craig.
Well, next week you'll be able to find me in Japan, but most of the time you can find me at the Repack Podcast or on Twitter at the Screamman.
And Egan can be found on this podcast. Adrian, how about you?
Well, you can find Egan on the couch in the next room half the time, but you can find me daily at the Atroy 1 Akiba Starbucks working on stuff. But if you want to catch me online, I am at Giant Robo on Twitter. So,
okay. And of course, you can catch me on Twitter at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C, one word. Also, you can contact us at the cast at speakerpod@gmail.com.
Yeah. Just want to say one quick thing. Just after bringing up FP7, like I said previously, like I'd rather have had an episode full of stock footage. That is FP7, and I like this episode better. So.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So I'm flipping. So this episode gets a pass just because of the existence of FB7.
All right. On that note, that's not a good note to end on. Celia,
can we talk about
something?
How awesome it was that when Chuck gets angry, his gills flicker?
Oh yeah, that was cool.
That's right.
That was really funny.
That's true. Okay, let's end this on Chuck's gills then. So
he's more angry about that than his missing sister.
Oh,
yes. Do you hear me?
All right. Well, here's hoping we get some more forward momentum, or that some of these revelations or hints at revelations we've been getting get some payoff next episode. But until then, until Craig is here on the couch with the rest of us. This is the Gurr Talk, folding out.